Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kavit Tafai. Under the Geneva deal reached between Iran and the world powers, Washington had agreed to refrain from slapping new sanctions on Iran. So why has Washington decided to blacklist Iranian individuals and companies? The U.S. response, we carried out the new sanctions within the framework of the existing sanctions regime, which had forced Tehran to the negotiating table and did not constitute new measures. But the U.S. Undersecretary of State Wendy Sherman insists that Congress could theoretically keep imposing new sanctions on Iran as long as they do not make it about their nuclear program. She said the only commitment we have made in this agreement is no new nuclear-related sanctions. What does Sherman's remarks mean or signify? Is there disparity and division between the U.S. Congress and the Obama administration, Israel's continued efforts to sabotage the nuclear deal, and the chances of this nuclear deal falling apart? Those questions and more in this edition of The Debate.
Less than 3 weeks since Iran and the five permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany reached a deal in Geneva, the U.S. Treasury has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran.
Today's actions should be a stark reminder to businesses, banks, and brokers everywhere that we will continue relentlessly to enforce our sanctions, even as we explore the possibility of a long-term, comprehensive resolution of our concerns with Iran's nuclear program.
The fresh sanctions targeting Iranian companies and individuals were announced just as Iranian experts were meeting with their peers from the P5 plus one group of countries in Vienna. The talks, also attended by experts from the UN Nuclear Agency, IAEA, were focused on a timetable for implementing the November 24th deal. In reaction to the fresh sanctions, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister, Abbas Araghchi, has said the restrictions are in full contradiction with the recent deal. Russia has also criticized the U.S. Treasury Department, calling on Washington to display a responsible approach to maintain the positive dynamics of the negotiating process.
Certainly, these so-called blacklists of the United States on Iran, they can complicate the realization of the Geneva Accords between Tehran and the six international mediators.
Meanwhile, several Democrat and Republican senators are teaming up on a new anti-Iran bill. The draft bill, which will be unveiled next week at the U.S. Senate, is aimed at triggering new sanctions if diplomatic talks with Iran fall apart. Some observers do agree that there's hardline thinking among U.S. politicians, but they blame Iran for that. Iranian officials have previously warned that any new sanctions are unacceptable. Foreign Minister Zarif has also warned the U.S. against killing the deal.
On the Iranian side, the argument goes to scare the Congress, as it were, by saying, if you say you will pass sanctions if this agreement does not work out, we can't even start to work out the agreement. That's what Iran is saying.
Tehran made certain concessions during the Geneva talks. It also accepted to be more transparent and even opened the doors of the Arak heavy water production plant to IAEA inspectors. In 1981, Iran and the U.S. signed the Algiers Accords, based on which the U.S. committed not to interfere in Iran's internal affairs, but it never kept its promise. Will this time be different? What is more important than reaching the deal with Iran is, will the U.S. remain committed to it in actions and not in words?
Just a few days after Christmas.
Let's see if we can find an answer to those two questions and a lot more. Let me introduce our guest. Former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert joins us from Orlando. We have a founding director of Democracy Institute, Patrick Basham, joining us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Scott Rickert, just over 2 weeks ago, a decadal dispute was resolved through a first-step interim deal between Iran and the world powers. Because the world wrongly thought Iran was after the nuclear bomb, no sooner had the ink gone dry. Here you have U.S. lawmakers going after new sanctions. I mean, why don't they want to give this a chance?
Well, I think you have to take a close look on where these sanctions are coming from. These sanctions are coming from the Treasury Department, that's basically David Cohen, and they're also coming from the Banking Department, where they're doing a delay tactic. These delay tactics are coming, basically they call it a rope-a-dope. Tim Johnson, the senator out of South Dakota, is basically a rope-a-dope. What that means is they're getting in a defensive posture and trying to make a Iran make a mistake. And in fact, what they've done is they've imposed sanctions and strengthened sanctions against companies that were working through the sanctions trying to keep the economy alive. These are companies that have partnerships with Malaysia and partnerships with China, and these are companies that do business throughout Singapore, and they're not operating illegally. They're just getting around the sanctions, doing business the way that they need to in order to sustain the Iranian economy. So unfortunately, Iran has suffered well over $200 to $300 billion in sanctions, and the easing supposedly that's coming out of these talks is really only around the automobile industry and only around the petrochemical products industry, like plastics and things like that. There's no easing on the banking side. There's no easing on the oil production side. So you're looking at maybe saving about $10 billion over 6 months that they say may start in 3 weeks. So at the end of the day, the Americans and the Western powers are basically interrupting the talks, and because it's only a delay until the next president comes in, and they'll manipulate that administration to continue the criminal economic warfare that's been going on against Iran for well over 70 to 80 years.
Well, Patrick Basham, I'm going to address the same question to you. I mean, why is it that the U.S. and its lawmakers are going through with these sanctions? We're looking at a situation decade old where at least the first step in terms of this agreement was reached.
Well, the bottom line is that, rightly or wrongly, the Obama administration thinks that the only reason that the agreement was reached in late November with the Iranian government is because the sanctions already in place were biting, and were biting hard, and that the Iranian government recognized that belatedly it needed to do something. And so this agreement, whether one thinks it's a good one or a bad agreement, the fact is that's how the American government views, that's its perspective on how it got Iran, not just to the table, but to actually agree to something tangible. And as Scott was saying, that what is going on now, in addition to sort of a rope-a-dope approach, is also a sort of a carrot-and-stick approach. Scott, I think, maybe a little bit generous in terms of how much relief the sanctions that are being taken off for 6 months will give Iran. I think it's probably closer to about $7 billion. But that stands, that is dwarfed by at least $30 billion dollars in sanctions that will remain in place over the next 6 months. And so what the Treasury Department is doing is sort of putting its foot, or the American government's foot, even heavier down, pressing it down even heavier on one side of the scale, on the stick side, even though there are now some carrots on the other side. So it reflects both the American government's view of how we got to where we are in terms of the most recent breakthrough. It also reflects the fact that in the U.S. Congress, there is a considerable amount of opposition to this deal, the view being that because Iran is only here because of sanctions, how much more could we have gotten if we had not provided any carrots and we had just continued along the same path or even pressed down even further with even more stringent sanctions. And also, it depends on which opinion poll you read, but a lot of Americans are skeptical of the deal. They would like there to be better relations with Iran, but they don't necessarily think that this deal is the path to achieve that goal. So it's politics, it's economics, but obviously from the Iranian perspective, it can be seen as contradictory and as difficult to fathom as to what is it that the American government is trying to achieve here, or should I say how it is that the American government is trying to achieve its goals of apparently better relations with Iran.
Let's go with that Iranian viewpoint, Scott Rickard, trying to break this down here. U.S. Undersecretary of State Wendy Sherman. Now, what she said about the slapping of new sanctions, and this was after being questioned by the Senate Banking Committee, he said that the possibility of imposing new sanctions on Iran for terrorism, the only commitment we have made, I'm quoting here, in this agreement is no new nuclear-related sanctions. I mean, does her comment give the Senate cover to try to impose new sanctions on Iran? Can you tell us what she's trying to say here?
I don't think that her comments give them any kind of capability of imposing new sanctions. The sanctions that are being prepared are basically being prepared in the event that Iran makes a mistake. They're in a sort of a wait mode and looking for an opening to basically, Patrick has said, put their foot even more heavily, as they've already done, on the other side of the scale. So they're preparing a next level of sanctions. And it's because of the influence on the government, basically by the petroleum industries that are very powerful in the West and in the United States. It doesn't take an expert to understand that you've got a really economic issue in the West. We're suffering dramatically. And Iran was doing fantastically. Their economy was growing incredibly great. And if they were able to produce their energy internally using solar or using any kind of nuclear technology, they would be tremendously beneficial to them, because they'd have much more product to sell on the market, whereby they were gaining great economic strength, just as Libya was. And look what they've done to that country. So it is definitely economics. When you say it's politics, well, maybe it's politics, but the root of the problem is really economics. The economic industries in the West have fallen by the wayside when you're talking about the financial communities. I mean, they're in complete debt, and then countries like Iran and Libya had absolutely no debt, and their economies were booming. So, you know, this has been a long-standing problem with the petroleum industries. The petroleum industries have run American politics for nearly well over a century now. So it's purely a financial issue, and it's purely a geopolitical issue by controlling the resources of other nations.
You know, I find this interesting, Patrick Basham, and I mentioned about Wendy Sherman and her presence at this Senate Banking Committee, in which Kerry, along with Vice President Joe Biden, were present briefing the members of the committee. You have a senator by the name of Mark Kirk who said it was fairly anti-Israeli, and I'm quoting, it was anti-Israeli, I was supposed to disbelieve everything the Israelis had just told me. This is what Kerry wanted senators there to understand, not to listen to what Israel is saying. So first of all, doesn't this show Israel's influence on senators when it comes to this recent nuclear deal?
Well, there's no question that the pro-Israeli lobby here in the United States, specifically here in Washington, is very powerful, historically has been very powerful for several decades. Its power, its influence is felt more greatly on some issues and less so on others. But there are members of the U.S. Senate who, for a variety of reasons, or should I say, overlapping reasons, are particularly sympathetic or somewhat sympathetic to the Israeli lobby's position. And in conjunction with that, of course, the Israeli Prime Minister, Mr. Netanyahu, is obviously takes a very hard line issue when it comes to relations with Iran. That's not exactly a state secret. And he has, as you are and your viewers no doubt are aware, been very, very vocal, very explicit since the deal was reached, his views on it and against it, and why he thinks the West, especially the United States, should not go through with it. That viewpoint, expressed in different ways by different people, both domestically and internationally, has resonated. It has traction in the U.S. Senate. It's not clear yet that it is overwhelmingly influential. I think that is to be determined, because through the dynamics of the internal politics of the U.S. Congress and the lobbying efforts in return or in rebuttal from the White House. But there is no question that what U.S. senators hear from Israel about this deal and about relations with Iran, many, but not all, many do take them very seriously and listen to them very carefully. So that the default position for many U.S. senators is to assume that the Israelis are probably correct and are probably communicating sort of good intelligence, and that what they hear from Tehran, the default position is to sort of be suspicious and distrustful. I mean, that reflects the history of the relations with the two countries over the last sort of 34, 35 years.
Right.
So that is the reality, whether one likes it or not.
Very well. We're going to get to some more of these statements that occurred during the Senate Banking Committee. And I saw you shaking your head there, Scott Rickard. And we're going to come back to you, Scott Rickard, after we take a listen to some of the viewer comments on this topic as posted on our Facebook page.
Let's face it, the U.S. is run from Israel. How many times have they talked to Iran only to go running back to Israel for its next move? The U.S. is a leopard that never changes its spots. USA, under the influence of the Jewish Zionist lobby, is pushing for a war with Iran. Either heed the spirit of the agreement or state your intentions. U.S. foreign policy leaves every agreement betrayed. Why is the U.S. putting more sanctions on Iran when they're offering to lift them to get a deal? I've always thought, okay, wait, and you'll hear the old, oh yes, Iran, we want to be on friendly terms with you, but... And the U.S., maybe if we go in there and bluff them with a deal and they won't take it, then we have grounds to invade them again.
Lots of viewer comments there, and very good ones, actually. Scott Rickard, you had some reaction, I believe, to Patrick Beauchamp before we went on that quick break to listen to the viewer comments.
Well, he had mentioned some things about the Israeli intelligence being good. That's actually an incredible overstatement. It's not good. It's extremely stilted. It is extremely biased and extremely racist when it comes to a lot of the surrounding countries. This is one of the most racist nations. It is an apartheid state. And it really needs to be hardline looked at from the American people. Unfortunately, if you talk like I do and you say the kinds of things and you're this kind of critical person, you will never get elected in this country. And by the way, it's very clear that anybody who supports the actual deal here with the Iranian lifting of sanctions, they are putting their congressional and their senatorial seats in jeopardy. There will be massive amounts of funds put up against them in the campaigns that come out in 2014, and these people will be put out of office. There is no doubt about it that the Israeli lobby and the pro-Israel and Zionist movements are extremely powerful in the United States government. You don't have to look far. You look at Bill Diamond in the state of Florida. He runs one of the biggest swing states for the Republican Party. He's a very powerful man. He's passing around money from guys like Adelson. And you don't know what you're looking at if you don't look into the details of the actual power that a lot of these financial banking institutions, as well as the petrochemical and the all of the aerospace defense industries have, not only in the United States, but throughout the Western allied countries.
Well, let's put that into perspective in terms of the power, Scott Rickard, that you're mentioning there, Patrick Beauchamp, my question to you. And I'm going to go back to that Senate Banking Committee, of which Kerry, Wendy Sherman, and Vice President Joe Biden were present at. Now here, a Senate aide familiar with the meeting said that every time anybody would say anything about what would the Israelis say, they'd get cut off. And then John Kerry would say, you have to ignore what they're telling you. Stop listening to the Israelis on this. So I'm taking Scott Rickard's statements about how powerful the Israeli lobby is regarding senators who are going to be out of a job, perhaps, come 2014. So are we looking at this division that exists between the immediate personnel of the U.S. administration encircling Obama, such as perhaps we could put John Kerry in there, Joe Biden in there, and even Wendy Sherman, and then some senators who are against this deal? Is there a division that has been created now? Because it appears that Obama wants this deal, obviously, given the first interim deal to be signed, for this to come into fruition and happen after this 6 months goes by.
Yeah, there certainly is a division now in American politics, in the U.S. Capitol, in Congress, and I think even arguably within the Obama administration over this deal specifically. And we're seeing some of that play out publicly on Capitol Hill and privately within the corridors of power here. And what it reflects in part, along with this, you know, particular points of view on the specifics of the deal, is a larger division, which I think is growing in this country, over America's relationship with Israel. You will recall that both as a candidate in 2008 and then as president in 2012, in those two presidential campaigns, Barack Obama was criticized strongly in some quarters and more gently in others over allegations that he was insufficiently sympathetic to, or to put it crudely, sort of insufficiently pro-Israel. And ever since his election and his re-election, every now and then when one of these pivotal issues comes to the fore, there are questions asked by the more pro-Israeli members of the administration and of the media here that perhaps this is an example of where President Obama is, you know, not going along with Israel in the way that they think he should. So it isn't black and white in the sense that, you know, American politics is influenced by the Israeli lobby, but certainly isn't, you know, kowtowing across the board. I think the Obama administration's actions here are a good demonstration of that. And if I could just clarify one thing, just to make clear, I earlier wasn't suggesting, I wasn't making an endorsement of the quality of Israeli intelligence. I was simply relaying the reality that many, arguably most, American politicians assume that it is good and therefore act on that basis.
Interesting. You used the word assume there. Scott Rickard, you were shaking your head. If you have a reaction to Patrick Basham there.
Well, Patrick's overemphasizing the significance of the deal. The deal is not very good. It's a really crappy deal for the Iranians, and it's a minor conciliatory give-up for the American side and the Western side, and then they're still fighting it. And Obama's, you know, is still heavily arming the Israelis. He's still, they just approved another 200 and some odd million, 80 some odd million in aid today to Israel. You know, this is just a small show of face, and it's barely a dent in the kinds of things that the Americans are doing to support a racist apartheid regime, just like South Africa. And God bless Nelson Mandela, who had something to do with getting rid of that government that was in South Africa. And that's what needs to happen in Israel. Those are the effects that need to happen in this world to make some change. Outside of that, it's just pure rhetoric.
Very well. We're going to unfortunately have to end it there. I wish we had more time. Let me thank our guest, former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickard, there talking to us from Orlando. And a big thank you for the founding director of Democracy Institute, Patrick Basham, talking to us from Washington. And thank you for watching another edition of The Debate. Do catch a repeat of this program on PressTV.com. For me, Kavitha Wei, and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.